You don't have to be afraid of the devil if you're not doing anything wrong.
Alabama Tape Projection.
Hey everyone, welcome to Taking It Down. No intro this week. What we are is the Alabama Takes TV and streaming podcast. The Alabama Take is a website with essays and writings and thoughts and many other podcasts under the umbrella of the Alabama Take. I'm Blaine Duncan. I'm the editor-in-chief of the Alabama Take, but I don't run all the podcasts, so you can go on there, find them all, pick the ones you like, subscribe, give them a rating. We talk TV and streaming mostly on this podcast, and with me almost every week is Adam Morrow. He is a musician, studio and traveling, and you can hear his music well beyond what we do here. His wife, Natalie, also joins us, Natalie Morrow, who is our go-to for fantasy and sci-fi and comics and reality TV, and she keeps us in line. And who's with me now, today, is Donovan Reinwald. He is a media specialist from, well, he's not from New England, but that's where he's living these
based
days.
Out of.
He's based out of, that's good, based out of New England. So, you know, if you're just busy and only have time for the show and you want to hear some thoughts and maybe your buddies haven't watched it or you want us to be your buddies, well, by God, here we are. You heard from him. It's Mr. Donovan Reinwald's with me.
That's the last they'll hear from me.
That's it. No more.
Stonewalling you.
Speaking of the Alabama Take in general, we're trying to change with our podcast. So we do video of it, but we're only doing video for the bonus, the extra, the segment that can stand on its own, perhaps. Maybe we get a little out of our lane in some of that bonus stuff. We might talk a little music or something a little different than just TV and streaming. That's a video version. You can find it on the YouTube channel for the Alabama Take, okay? But you can listen to the audio, which is what you're doing now. In any podcast app, you can stream it from thealabamatake.com. And the audio is also in YouTube, but it's just the audio with an image, so there's nothing much to see. You'll see a show poster or an episode poster with it. That's about it. You know, listen to it however you want, and we appreciate you listening. Let's get into our show today. Really quick apology to anyone listening, to Donovan, who's here with me and probably going to have to carry the episode. If the podcast goes sideways, I've just taken 20 ligadones, so.
Well, you washed them down with something, right?
I sure did. Five glasses of wine.
I was going to say, was it Red Bull?
Red wine.
That'll kind of counteract. Blaine, all right. Would you, hypothetically, break me up in a basement?
I would never do that to you.
Okay, that makes me feel much more comfortable.
You're one of my favorite people, but there are some that could use it. All right, before we get into, we're alluding to the fall of the House of Usher, obviously, and Edgar Allan Poe. Before we get into it, though, big news this weekend, sad news as well.
Yeah.
Sudden death of Matthew Perry, who drowned. I really haven't had time to process it because I got the news right before going to concert last night, and then I was swept up in the joy of the concert. So the sadness of it hasn't reared its head, really. Did Matthew Perry mean anything for you as an actor, or was the friend stuff and some of his other things a little ahead of where you were?
Yeah, it was a little. I mean, I've seen good chunks of Friends, just from reruns. It's not my favorite show by any means, but like Matthew Perry was like, it was like Friends was a show that my parents watched, like when I was young,
right?
And so it was just like, oh, this like, and I was honestly surprised that he was just 54, because like it felt like he should have been older to me.
Oh, really?
Just because I was a little kid, and he just, I mean, he was young, obviously, when Friends started. So, but yeah, just kind of like an omnipresent, like one of those people that you're like, oh, wow, I just kind of thought you'd always be around, you know?
Mm-hmm. My observation of him of late, you know, he did a big book tour around
last year, right?
This time last year. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he was on a lot of talk shows. You saw him more than ever. I actually read the book. His book actually is one of the fastest reads I think I'd ever done. I think I read it in a day and a half. It was very enthralling. He basically recounts his life as an addict and how that worked for him and didn't work for him as one of the co-stars of Friends and beyond into his movie career. he was the reason I watched Friends when I watched it. And I'm sure a lot of our male cohorts get this, but late in high school and then in early college, I had a lot of people tell me, you're just like Chandler from Friends. So that's what made me start watching it. And I started admiring his sense of humor. I don't know if we have anything in common as far as our sense of humor, or definitely not looks, but I definitely liked his sense of humor. If he was not on the show, if that character had not been scripted for him as the seasons went on, obviously, I don't know that I would have watched it. And it's sad. It's sad that he went and got through some very intense moments with recovery and hospital stays and surgeries, only to die, you know, somewhat young, as just swimming.
It is sad. Actually, I agree with you, you know, because it's like, I don't know, like, you don't get guarantees, right? But like, if life worked the way we wanted it to, it's like, you put in the effort like that, you get something out of it, instead of like, you know, like, you put in all that effort, but oops, you died anyway.
I mean, he tried to kill himself. He kind of admits as much in the book that he was just taking massive amounts of pain medicine that would kill anyone. But he just had built up such a huge tolerance, it was ridiculous. I do recommend his book still. I think it's good. It reads in a crisp voice. His voice is very much like his speaking voice. Yeah, it's just kind of sad, man.
I am actually, honestly, just talking here. I don't know. Have I ever seen him in a movie?
Have you seen?
All I can think of that I've seen him in is Friends.
The Whole Nine Yards with Bruce Willis?
I have seen it.
And then they...
Yeah, I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, they did a sequel to it. And he was good in it. He played a dentist who got wrapped up in a mafia guy's scheme. Pretty fun. Okay. Pretty funny. And he's got more. There were a few more, more low-key.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily indie, because he didn't do the indie route, but they were smaller budget movies. You know, like the kinds of movies they would make in the 90s. Those smaller budget films, more of a...
Back when we still had those.
Back when we had them, and it was... You know, the plot would involve he marries I forget the name of the film, but he married a Selma Hayek in the film because she was an immigrant trying to, you know, stay in the United States. Uh-huh. I think that they had a one-night stand is the plot, and that's how it wasn't very planned. Anyway, those kinds of movies.
Hijinks ensue.
Right. I really should have looked up that movie before talking about it, but nonetheless, just won't be the same. No more Friends reunions, not officially, like that.
Mm.
All right, we want to wrap up our discussion on The Fall of the House of Usher from Netflix and creator Mike Flanagan. We're going to look through episodes 5 through the last, which is episode 8. Good chance we're going to spoil anything that came before that, too, in reference to these episodes. So be forewarned if it's something you want to come back to and listen to. You know, happy Halloween if you're listening on day of, if you're caught up on all this. If you want to... listen to a little bit, we'll try to label the episodes we're talking about as much as we can. Let's just start. Frederick did a little toot at the hospital, didn't he?
More than a little, Blaine.
Yeah, he did a big old rail at the hospital.
I don't know why. Like, I know that this is, I can't remember the actor's name, E.T.'s pal.
Henry Thomas.
But thank you, Henry Thomas. And he's been in a couple, like, he was the dad in Hill House and some other stuff. And I know he's the one that Natalie can't stand the most.
Which I want to, just everything. I want to bring up.
He just makes me laugh. Like, he seems so clownish, right? Like, I'm just like, this. I actually don't mind him. Like, I think he's trying to be a buffoon.
I think so, too. I sincerely think he is. He might be miscast. It might be too much to see him in such a role, but I will say this. Natalie did bemoan his acting not too long ago, but in the episode, I'm jumping way ahead here, episode 8, skip 15 seconds, or excuse me, episode 7, so skip 15 seconds. Now, in his Freddy's episode, I kind of think of these episodes as the...
Yes, they're dedicated to, yeah, totally.
He really did the good job of acting like a man on cocaine.
I believe
I have
that.
Been like, around men on cocaine, and he was a man on cocaine. The thing he got right was...
The burst of energy to, like, paper your entire wall with...
Well, the thing he got right in just simple, detailed acting was those people who do cocaine, they sincerely sniff a lot. That is not hyperbole.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those first 5 or 10 minutes that they've done some, it's sniff, sniff, sniff. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But he also did the acting of a man who was a bit way too on edge. Buffoonish.
He was ripped to the gills.
And it sells the fact that he is an idiot, you know, because he does this and it just propels his buffoonery into the stupidity he eventually gets into. So,
yeah, I agree.
Let's back up a little bit. Quick thoughts on the Telltale Heart episode where Vic accidentally kills Dr. Ruiz, her partner, her life partner. Lover.
I mean, we all knew it was coming, but I did kind of like the, you know, the twist that it's like, oh, she tried to fix her.
Right. Yeah. You don't find out until the ending, but you do see Vic calling and leaving her voicemails for her lover. That plays mm-hmm. into creepy nicely because mm-hmm. she's dead. You know?
Overall, I wouldn't say it was my favorite episode because a little bit of the there's only 8 episodes here, but you know, somewhere around the middle, it's like, it's a little sleepier.
It is.
But then I thought it picked up again, you know, and also I know that like Vic's heart thing is sort of important to the plot, but also it's not important at all.
No.
But I did like its take on the Telltale Heart.
I did too. The title alone.
The gruesomeness.
Right. The title alone gives it away, but there's the small twist here on the post story where Roderick can hear the sound, not mm-hmm. just Vic. So it's mm-hmm. like a combination going insane.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was nice. I knew exactly where it was going, but I think the acting of the lady who plays Vic was pretty good.
Yeah, she was good. Yeah, as soon as she throws the paperweight, right, it's like, oh, you know she's dead. Right? And it's all, and I mean, it's called the Telltale Heart, mm-hmm. so you know someone's mm-hmm. going to die.
So,
but I mean, that I'm not here to argue that this is like great TV or whatever, but it has been kind of fun to be like, oh, how are they going to do like the Poe theme?
That's the thing. Are they going to
I've actually kind of liked
Are they going to subvert the story or give you just the modern version? That's mm-hmm. been relatively fun.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Now, I think it's the same episode 5, where I did have a letdown, pretty big. And this mm-hmm. is one reason why I don't like episode 5 very much. So the informant's revealed to be non-existent and it's never picked back up.
Yeah.
It was just kind of wind everyone up.
Yeah, it was. But it made it seem like a big plot point, and they all made it a big deal. And then all of a sudden, like, we know not to care anymore. And because we know not to care anymore, they don't care, but it doesn't make sense that they don't care.
It felt unfair. It was mm-hmm. the Chekhov's gun that ended up being Chekhov's
pen. It was a dud. It was a fizzle.
Chekhov's invisible nothing, whatever.
Because you'd think if they really thought there was an informant, and people were getting bumped off one by one, mm-hmm. then like Roderick, at least, maybe not his sister, who twigs pretty early on that something supernatural is happening, but Roderick, you'd think, would be out for blood.
Yeah. The informant thing they should not have done, or if they were going to do it, it should have been brought up very briefly and just kind of lingered, but they kept bringing it up every episode mm-hmm. many times.
And except it ends with this one because we, the viewers, find out mm-hmm. there's no informant, and all of a sudden they don't care.
That wasn't very cool, even for the campiness of Flanagan in this run of episodes and House of Usher. Episode 6 is Goldbug. This is the one story I know nothing about with Poe.
It's actually much more like a detective story.
Okay.
So it really doesn't have much to do with this except the name. So, yeah, there's not really... This was the... I actually did like this episode. Oh. There's some stuff with the... I'm halfway remembering something I read back in high school with Goldbug. Because, like, there's something with, like, they're, like, searching for treasure on an island, if I'm remembering... Oh, by the way, if I'm misremembering this story, viewers, please write to compliance@olemiss.com.edu. I'm sorry. And, like, they're looking for treasure on this island, and they have to do... Anyway, it's like, a detective story, kind of. So...
So, really didn't play into this other than...
Not really, just the title.
The title
was about it.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you something. When old girl Tamerlane makes coffee and tea and then feels like she's nodded off, or when she just starts taking notes only to find that they're looked back down and they're done immediately without her having thought about them, I just assumed she needed to lay off the Ambien, because that has happened to me.
Okay.
But I'll be damned if it doesn't show her after all that taking the Ambien after all that.
I was going to say I had the opposite supposition, which is that she'd been up way too long, which is what I think they leaned
into.
Yeah,
they did.
What
they
it did. Is, you know, because it's like she's just getting, she's having psychosis, essentially.
Yeah. In all honesty, listeners, I have once or twice done something a little silly on Ambien. Nothing too bad. But you do wake up and think, oh, okay, I must have done that right before I went to sleep. Right. Okay, so the Tammy episode's not my favorite. I did find it a dip. I honestly thought the Telltale Heart dipped a little, Ooh. And I thought the Tamerlane episode dipped a little, Goldbug dip.
Interesting. I'd say Telltale Heart dipped more, because I was just kind of like I said, I'm not going to argue this is great TV. No. I kind of wanted to see what happened.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
That's, you know, I kind of wanted to know what was going on.
Yeah, there is some smart play here in that Flanagan knows, most of us have read Poe or are aware of it. How does he get to the ending Poe does? Will he? It's about that, mm-hmm. too. And I will say this, damn, man. The moment Ghost Tammy entered the picture with a blast from behind, I did a Donovan.
Oh, I did a little jumping.
I shook. I got a little jump. I don't know that much has given me as big of a startle as the Tammy ghost did.
That is over the whole episode. That is my biggest jump right there.
I think it's mine too.
Yeah.
But I want to say this. I figured something out, and listeners may appreciate this and want to implement it. I have been watching this series as my daughter winds down and is asleep, so I have to watch it on an iPad so it's not as bright, and I have to watch it with AirPods in. And, you know, Apple's done a really good job with their AirPods so that the sound's pretty amazing. And when she comes through behind Roderick, the sound was so loud. But at the same time, I was enveloped in the story of Arthur Pym. This is where you get his backstory. Right? So you're like, oh, I've been waiting for this. Who is this guy, Arthur Pym? And they give it to you only to set up a jump scare. Not only, but they do it as well as in conjunction.
Effectively. Jump scare.
And you talked about that last week, how Flanagan's dialogue can be pretty mesmerizing. And you kind of lean into the TV.
Yeah, when he's on, he's on. Yeah. You're at least like kind of like, what's going on here? I do think with this episode, so there were folks other than Flanagan who directed this, mm-hmm. especially the last couple episodes. Another Mike, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. I did think that the Tamerlane, and maybe it was more, this might be more style than substance, but I thought the Tamerlane episode was very good at, with the camera, only letting you see like the back of her head or the back of her and like nothing else in the room. And it's like, what else is in there?
Yeah.
I was of the opinion that paid off with the mirrors.
I agree.
Because it's like, we finally start seeing stuff.
Oh, that's a nice. Okay. Oh, I see your connection now. I like that.
Yeah. Cause it was like, we couldn't see it. And you kind of have it in the back of your head. Like, what aren't we seeing? What might she be seeing? And then mm-hmm. I felt like it paid
it's
off.
Good.
But,
back to Arthur Pym really quickly. I never would have guessed his backstory involved the North Pole and possible cannibalism.
That's from the novel. It's the only novel that Poe ever wrote.
I suppose so, but I don't know the details of that one as much, I guess. It's one of the, it wasn't as foreign to me as Goldbug, but maybe I've never read it and only heard of it.
I think it's very weird.
But
much like Edgar Allan Poe.
But just Arthur Pym in general, if you see him on the screen, it's Mark Hamill. You're not going to think, oh, okay, he went to the North Pole. Maybe he ate someone there.
Man, I just tell you what, my favorite character in this whole damn thing is Arthur Pym. Yeah. I just love Mark Hamill being just chewing up the scenery, being campy, growling.
I've got so many questions. Yeah. So many questions. Still, even though I know some of his backstory. Ghost Tamerlane, though, when she jumps through that window is... She does a quick neck lady reference from The Haunting of Hill House.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm. I thought that her ghost was the most gruesome, actually. Mm-hmm. It's because it's clearly whatever they had to do to her to get her ready to, you know, be buried.
Yeah, because Perry's is a little cartoonish.
Yeah, he kind of looks like a lobster.
Yeah, you've seen that type of monster or ghost.
And then, you know, the other two are just kind of bloody. Mm-hmm. Not anything particularly scary, but I thought the Tamerlane one was the scariest.
I agree.
Oh, actually, the Frederick one was pretty good, too.
I don't think I've seen Frederick's yet. Is that in the...
You watch Frederick's episode, right? Where he goes.
Okay.
So it's when he hears the... Roderick hears the clock.
Yes. Love it.
And he says to Dupin, oh, you can hear that, too.
Yes.
And he's like, now Freddy's going to try and remind me to tell it right. Blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden, it's his wife, Annabelle. And Freddy.
He's
holding
Freddy.
God,
yes.
Freddy's been cut in half.
How did I forget
so
that?
I was like, okay, that's pretty good because we never really see the adult ghost Freddy.
Yeah.
It's something that torments him much more because he took this kid and ruined
right.
him.
We'll stick kind of chronologically in the episodes.
I
might be jumping one ahead, but I'm not very sure. So we find out that I just call her the Raven now.
Verna
is her name, but you can twist those letters around quite easily and say Raven.
Yes,
I think
yes, very easily.
I think the Raven hanging out with Mitch McConnell is probably where she learned her trade. Just let people die. But now Donald Trump, hard to say. Maybe she was just partying.
She was just hanging out. I did kind of like
she's
the
like party.
I did, and this is jumping around, but I did kind of like the Donald Trump digs coming from him. It's like, how long? Even I have my limits. It's like, we all feel that way, Arthur.
Yeah, it did bring to mind, or I thought of the question, is this hinting that the Raven is some sort of punisher of greed? But of course, we're going to get to some of this in a second.
Yeah.
Yeah. In a way, but...
I mean, some of these people don't seem like they've been punished yet.
Continuing on some of the things that the show does well, it had enough plot threads. Only one of which disappointed me with the possible, informant, mole, as they kept misnomering it. It's got enough plot threads in different timelines to keep me from being bored with any one character or one setting too long. It keeps the talky nature of the series from being boring, leaves you with questions that you want answered, and it answers them. And I love that. If you pose a question, episode two or three later, give us an answer and we'll move on and try to answer another question posed.
Especially for a series that's as short as this is.
Yeah.
Just give us, don't delay the payback.
I think
too long.
Flanagan understands that.
The payoff.
So here were some of my questions. And you having watched the entire series, me having watched 7 of 8, but these were mine. Where's Madeline in present day? You never see her through 7 episodes. Where is Arthur
you will see
in
her
present
in
day? You do not.
You will see Arthur and Madeline in the 8th episode.
And I'm excited to do that.
What happens to Arthur is exactly what Verna says will happen to him, because he's the only one that could turn down her deal.
Okay. I did have the question, and this gets answered in episode 7, so we could talk about it in detail. What motivated the Raven, or who is she? This one hasn't been answered yet, so don't spoil it for me. I'm sure it happens in episode 8. When and why did Roderick break bad? Especially in his marriage, because he doesn't seem to hate her or have any animosity toward her. And finally, why does Arthur wear those gloves so much? You can give me a yes or no. Is that answered?
No.
What the fuck? Love it.
Never answered his whole look. And also, like, the other question is, like, why is he such a loyal enforcer? But they're not interested in answering that. And honestly,
okay.
I don't care.
Think Roderick does kind of answer it with his story of the North Pole. He's like, I can count on that kind of person.
So, well, yeah, no, I like, but that for me is like, that's why Roderick trusts him. But why is Pym such a loyal fixer? Why is he so loyal to the ushers?
Yeah.
And he is.
Does Tam turn the phrase, what the fuck are you doing here, into something? I mean, no, but do I credit having found myself in that situation so many times where, I said the wrong thing I really meant to say, what the fuck are you doing here?
Yes. I did like the moments of spare comedy when Juno's like, I'm just here to support you.
Yeah, that kind of was funny. I'm not crazy.
That made me laugh.
I'm not crazy about that actress, but she looks around.
Yeah, she's fine. Yeah. She's
nice touch.
She is actually one of the plot threads that I think could have been snipped. Like, it's fine that she's
Okay, so if we have a plot thread that needs snip, it's the informant. If we have a character that's unnecessary, it's her. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, she does kind of show, like, who Roderick is.
Yeah, how he's still philandering and picking up way too young.
Still philandering, she's hooked on Ligonin. I wouldn't have missed her, I don't think. Sorry, whoever played Juno. I'm glad you got your paycheck.
I guess we would be robbed of her getting hit in the head with a microphone stand, which was comedy gold.
She doesn't get hurt too bad, though. I was like, she just has like a little bump on her head. I'm like, I thought she'd be in the hospital.
The comedy of that, though. Okay, so here's my question to you. Very philosophical, theoretical.
Okay.
What if when people have these public breakdowns, they're really just reacting to things we can't see?
This is like when your cat just stares at the wall and it's like, oh, ghosties.
It's a ghost.
No, my cat HP, who listeners of the show may know, is the P stands for perfect. She's a very sweet cat. But she went for through a phase where she would sit on the arm of the sofa, but instead of facing forward, she would face backwards and just stare at the wall for like hours.
Well, that's because you're,
and I'm like,
that's because your great grandfather's
like, buried
in
that wall. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, do I need to open this up and, you know, who's in there?
Open it and there's more cats. You mentioned this, but I'll tack on. The mirrors as part of the Tammy's apartment was a nice touch. For me, you mentioned your how you thought it was a very intelligent choice, but I will say that she's a self-help guru, but she can't take care of herself, so the mirrors are the, I thought that was kind of, it
she's
worked.
She's a narcissist. She's a narcissist, exactly. Yeah. So this is also not high art, but I found her death appropriately gruesome. Mm-hmm. Like they built it up with that ghost, and then it's like, oh wow, that is pretty hideous. And there was some foot trauma stuff when she's pulling glass out of her feet.
Very Die Hard.
That was rough.
Very Die Hard there.
Absolutely.
I saw someone on a message board compare the family and the kids to Seven Deadly Sins, with Madeline and Roderick being together as greed, and. Mm. I didn't memorize the rest, but I thought it was a fun mental exercise.
I kind of like that take. Yeah, because there's six kids. Uh-huh. And it's like Madeline and Roderick are greed, but it's also, I don't know if I'm saying this right, but you know, like there's greed, but there's also like there's ambition mixed in there, where people are just things to be used.
Oh, yeah.
And they would do anything it took to get, you know, to get one rung higher on the ladder. Yeah. And that kind of greed, where it's like it's not just about the money; it's something so broken in your personality.
I think Flanagan came along somewhere in an interview and said that's not quite what they had in mind, but he loves that viewers are enjoying it in that way, and he's all for it.
Mm-hmm.
He does admit that, of course, it's obvious that they chose specific colors for some of those endings and deaths. I don't know why it took me until Tammy's episode to figure that out, but it very present. You can go back and figure that out.
Absolutely. All the colors.
Carla Gugino as the Raven, she's not quite scary enough to me. I'm a hard one to scare with television and books. In real life, I'm scared of everything.
Right.
I mean, you name it, I'm afraid.
So I don't think she's supposed to be scary. And I kind of have to base this on something that happens in the last episode, which is basically DuPont goes back to his husband and his kids and their kids. After seeing, and he sees a raven, but he doesn't have anything to fear from her.
Mm-hmm.
He's not trying to make deals like that with her. He's not trying to, you know, like, so I do think that it's like, she doesn't have to be, she's kind of like weird and scary. She's definitely some kind of supernatural entity, right? Is she the devil? Maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That's kind of where I landed.
Probably not. I think it's almost like you don't have to be afraid of her. Like, these people created their own problem.
I gotcha.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's like, you know, Pym is the only one with enough integrity to say no to her.
You don't have to be afraid of the devil if you're not doing anything wrong.
Basically, yeah. I don't think she's really the devil. I think she's like a little less malevolent than that with like some of her actions, but maybe she's the devil. She's certainly some sort of vengeful
being.
Yeah,
that's something I want to ask, actually.
She's a real monkey's paw kind of friend.
That's a nice reference. Thought I had a good question about the Raven. You could determine if you think it's good. I'm probably jumping ahead a little in our conversation, but does the Raven taking joy in Freddy's demise say to us that Flanagan thinks devils can do the right thing or have to do something that's necessary? Or
see, it's stuff like that that makes me think that like she's not a devil, and then there is a death that happens in the last episode, and you can probably figure out who it is that she takes no pleasure in. And she offers a sort of a consoling message before the death. So I don't know. I don't know that she's really like satanic, if that makes sense. Like, I don't think that this is like the demon from The Exorcist. You know, I think that this is really like it's almost, or maybe if it's a devil, like it's an old school like Inferno type devil, where it's like, you know, you're getting punished by what you did in life, right? So like, what is it? Like, adulterers are always blown about by the wind, and I can't remember all the torments. You know?
I thought for a second that Flanagan...
Very medieval.
That Flanagan's telling us, pick what word you want, I'll use devil. That devils enjoy what they do because people deserve it.
That's kind of actually what I think I was trying to get around to with the Inferno thing, where it's like you're reaping the consequences of your actions. Hmm. And this supernatural entity... Again, like if you're a good person, you have nothing to fear. But who among us is a good person, right?
Not mean. You know, I mentioned best way to watch these are out for me is as good a sound as possible. And the AirPods really helped with the clock in Roderick's sort of present day. That can get you. And the sound design is top notch.
Very good. Honestly, I think like the production values of the whole on this show are very, like, I think the directing is good. The sets are good. The costumes are good. You know, like the sound is good. Like it looks good. Like the camera, what do you call it? Director of photography, yes. Who's ever in charge of that. Like it actually looks good to watch.
I can't get over how beautiful the set is between Dupin and Roderick when they're at the fireside.
Yeah.
It looks like a painting.
It's great.
The moment you get a sense of what happens to young Roderick becomes just an intelligent bit of casting. I thought that maybe young Roderick, that actor, might not. I was bemoaning that he wasn't going to be on screen as much, but, you know, he's the hero of Flanagan's other shows, Midnight Mass being one.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's used to convey this false sense of a good man or a man who could be easily controlled by his sister, who's more brutal than he.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. I think he did a pretty good job, actually. Yeah. It's just seeing like the kind of like he's ambitious too. And some of him is go along to get along, but is also kind of like, well, maybe he does have his principles, right? Like we've seen enough of his background.
Right. Madeline being the brainchild of it all. That's probably going to either work for you or not, but I thought it was good.
No, I thought it was good. Because I think that it's not anything that the show hadn't suggested already.
It's Madeline who's made the Faustian bargain.
Hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And
no. Roderick
yes,
did too.
And Roderick. Right. He had to be roped in, I'm sure. Yeah. Madeline being able to touch the Raven, slap her in episode 7.
Mm-hmm.
Is that answered in 8?
Not really. Because, you know, sometimes she's like smoke. Uh-huh. Right. Sometimes Madeline can touch her. Sometimes she can't. You saw the episode with Pim, right? Like he knocks her out and puts her body in a bag. And then the bag deflates because she's not of this earth.
So Freddie's episode is episode 8. I thought that for me, having watched only 7, that was the best one of them.
Yeah, I liked that one.
I did too.
Yeah, there was a lot of good stuff going on. Really liked all the Pym stuff, just because I'd like Mark Hamill chewing the scenery out there, kind of like what he did with that character.
Yeah.
I'll also say, like, if we're rating deaths, his was fairly gruesome.
Yeah. And you do, it comes into clearer focus some of the choices Henry Thomas is making.
Yes.
And it works.
Yeah, agreed. I also thought it was pretty good. Like, not perfect, but just the way, of course he gets stuck in there because he's going to, what is he looking for? His wife's ring? I can't remember.
Yeah.
Something to hurt her with, basically.
Yeah.
And of course he gets stuck in there. Of course he's an idiot. Of course even with prompting, of course he switched out the powers.
Mm-hmm. He's a buffoon. He switched the cocaine for the paralytic.
There is a little bit where I thought, I don't think this is great acting, but like Lenore's trying to talk to him and he's bowling and he's like, you know, specials are seeing her. And then Lenore goes away and he gets his strike and he's just, yeah, like just the way that he just doesn't give a shit about anything but that bowling.
It's kind of funny.
It made me laugh.
How do you feel about episode 8 as a cap on the whole series?
Fine.
Yeah.
Like it's not a horrible ending. Everything kind of comes together. You could probably, I mean, it's called The Raven. You can probably figure out what's happening.
Okay.
In it. Chekhov's rattling in the basement is appropriately.
I can't wait. Yeah, I'm excited for that because I have wondered a lot. Again, you know, the show gets you some questions going.
We find out about the bargain they made, when they made it,
and why they made it. At this point, it's obvious that they, or Roderick, has at least holed up his boss up in the...
That is also addressed.
Right. But when does he go from being loyal boss who will lie under oath versus I'm going to, you know, hole you up and brick you into the wall? That's an interesting thing I want to see play out.
You know, they don't, at least my impression of it is they don't, it's more like, oh, he was this way all along. Right? Like, kind of like you said.
Young Roderick.
Huh. Yeah, I like what you said about them using the actor, so he gives you like a false sense of like, oh, he's a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
But like, maybe he really isn't.
Yeah,
you know? Like,
I was kind of hoping,
looking back on everything,
I was kind of hoping that they would use that actor, you know, as a, or excuse me, the character of young Roderick as being, you know, relatively good, decent. And then it took someone like his sister or whomever, at the time I didn't know, to mm-hmm. needle him, to get him to where he ends up in life.
Mm-hmm.
Do they address his philandering? Like, he suddenly is a family man versus philanderer.
Sort of.
That's fair.
It's sort of. I thought it was fairly good. But
all right. Well, I'm looking forward to watching that last episode. I hate I couldn't watch it before today. I would have had more to say.
You know, I'll say for episode 8, it's a little overlong, but they wrap everything up. Stuff happens that you pretty much would figure would happen, and you know, I enjoyed
watching
it.
They needed the time, I suppose. They did have some lingering things.
I don't know if they did, but I think it's like an hour and 15. I think they could have done it in a tight hour, but it's not bad. Like, I don't know what I would cut.
That's a good point. It seems to be the case with a lot of these episodes. You could trim 5 minutes and maybe be okay.
Yeah. Definitely. Just take out, I'm sorry, whoever played Juno, but take you out and we've got like 30 extra minutes to work with.
She's a good demonstration of what we're talking about with old Roderick. He's still got his eye on the younger women. He's feeding her ligodone.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know if you couldn't make a shorter choice with that somewhere. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Well, that's what we got for you this week. This possibility will be off next week. It's possible. We'll see, though. Maybe not. We will keep you updated on social media. Where can you find us? You can find us on Twitter or X still, but probably more permanently, Threads, Instagram, Blue Sky, and TikTok. All of those are Taking It Down Pod. Got you some consistency there so you can find us. The Alabama Take is also on those social media sites and helps get the word out on a lot of things too. Join us next week, assuming we're back, and if not, join us in 2 weeks. We'll figure this out soon. I'm Donovan Reinwald. He's Blaine Duncan. And that's it. Thanks, y'all.